Big Ten football is back, Michigan football is back, and that means Hail to the Pod is back for another season. We'll get you everything you need to know about this 2020 Michigan football team and preview Minnesota with Ryan Burns from GopherIllustrated.com. All that and a whole lot more coming up next on this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Welcome to a new season of Hail to the Pod. I'm your host, Kevin Rich. As always, you can hit me up on Twitter at krich23, email the show at hailtothepod@gmail.com, and be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast where all your favorite podcasts are found, including Google Play, Apple iTunes, and Spotify. And of course, if you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, anytime we shoot out a new episode, it will automatically download to your device. If you enjoy the show, do me a favor, give it a 5-star review. So before we get too deep into the show here, I know we're like a minute in, I just hope that you, your loved ones, families, friends, coworkers, and the latter, hope that you're all staying safe and healthy during what's been some crazy and unprecedented times. You know, it seems just like the other day, we were gearing up for March Madness. Michigan was getting ready to tip off the noon game in the Big Ten basketball tournament. And then boom, everything just started to shut down. And it's crazy that, you know, here we are 7 months later and still dealing with this crazy pandemic. So again, wishing you and yours all staying safe and healthy during these times. As for me, I'm good dealing with the typical stuff that I know many of you are during these times. A lot of uncertainty out there, but just happy to have my job, happy to have my health, happy to have a home and put food on the table, and obviously happy to provide you with some levity with a podcast talking about our beloved Michigan Wolverines, and happy that our football team will be kicking off their season this Saturday under the lights for the Little Brown Jug in Minneapolis against the Gophers. This is also a little milestone. This is the 25th episode of Hail to the Pod, kicking off the third season of the podcast here. So can't thank you enough for tuning in each week during football season and making this something that I look forward to putting together each and every week. So alas, we're here. The 2020 Big Ten football season is set to kick off in the strangest of times. And I'll admit, I'm happy beyond happy. Let me not overstate that. I'm beyond happy that we're going to have some Michigan football to watch on Saturday. It's going to be strange, you know, not being in the big house this fall, not being on that great campus of Ann Arbor, not eating those cheesy fries at Mr. Spots and drinking some brews before kickoff while tailgating in the Chrysler parking lot. But, you know, we have a season. We have a season that we can look forward to and a season that really a heck of a lot can happen. And I'm cautiously happy. And I'm sure you are too, because, you know, not to be a Debbie Downer here, but given the COVID situation, given what we're seeing with surging cases across our country, you know, cases going up on college campuses throughout the country, what we're seeing in the SEC right now with teams like Florida and others having to postpone games due to positive COVID tests and coaches and players battling that, playing a 9-game season in the Big Ten, 8 games in a row, with an end of the year cross-sectional matchup with that conference championship and, you know, the East number 2 versus the West number 2 and 3 versus 3 and so on, it just seems like a pretty high mountain to climb. And, you know, I typically love these first shows every year because we get to make a ton of predictions, right? We get to prognosticate and, you know, talk about the wins and losses and expectations and all this, but it's just a different year this year. And, you know, sure, we can look at this schedule on paper and say, yeah, it's a tough schedule and it's a real good year if the team goes 7-1 or 6-2, but I don't know how you do that this year. You circle that big date, December 12th, down in Columbus and say, wow, you know, maybe this is the year. Maybe they can, you know, pull it off and beat Ohio State. Ohio State, much to our chagrin, you know, one of those incredible runs right now. Those come and go. It's the heyday of Alabama football. It's the heyday of Clemson football. It's a heyday for Ohio State football. I mean, this is what we come to see. And again, it comes and goes, but ESPN, their FPI, all those odds out there say Ohio State has a 90% chance of winning that game. But here's what we know. That game is 8 weeks away. The college football teams and conferences that have been playing prior to the Big Ten starting this week have already been dealing with players getting sick, games needing to be moved, and so on. We get later into the winter here, then we're battling the flu, same time as COVID. You know, I guess just what I'm getting at here is the Big Ten, they have no margin of error. They don't have a bye that can move rescheduled games to. And I understand the initial plan for the Big Ten was let's play in the spring. But then all the pressure out there, the chances of players, more players sitting out, what would happen on the recruiting trail with players, you know, going to other schools that are playing this time of year. You know, because the other conferences like the Big 12 and SEC and ACC decided to play in the fall, it really put the Big Ten in a tough position. But the Big Ten has no margin of error. They don't have a bye week. They can't move rescheduled games. It's extremely possible that Michigan could be a 5-win football team this year. And a 5-3 team, not good. But they could be a 5-1 team and only play 6 games, not 8. So, you know, how that game on December 12th shapes up, we just don't know yet. God forbid some key players from either team wouldn't be able to play because they have to sit for 21 days following a positive COVID test. I mean, we already see it this weekend. Minnesota's PJ Fleck said that a number of players will be unavailable versus Michigan due to COVID-19. Now, we don't know who. We don't know if that's Tanner Morgan or Rashad Bateman. Those would be devastating blows for Minnesota. But Vegas knows something. Minnesota was a 2-point favorite. Michigan's now a 3.5-point favorite, 5.5, 6-point swing. And we all know Vegas always knows something. So I'm not going to prognosticate and predict how the season's going to unfold here on the podcast like we usually would in a normal, you know, first show of the year or preview show, because there's just too many variables. I think it's hard to predict that the full season's going to happen. But using coach speak, we just got to take it week by week. And for the coaches, for the players, for the athletic departments, for all the fans, going week by week is what we'll have to do, and hope and pray for the best, because no one wants to see any student athlete get seriously ill or, God forbid, lose their life due to this pandemic. So I'm done being a Debbie Downer. Just had to address that. Pump will be playing football on Saturday. Pump Michigan football is getting underway. But just a little optimistic, cautiously optimistic on how things will go in this crazy season. But talk about a great opportunity for the Big Ten. The spotlight on Saturday. College game day in Minneapolis. No fans will be allowed. But Michigan, Minnesota, the battle for the little brown jug. Primetime on ABC. National spotlight for a young and talented Michigan football team and a Minnesota team that won 11 games last year and has some high hopes for this year. Just how high those hopes are, what can we expect to see from Minnesota? We'll hear about that with Ryan Burns from GopherIllustrated.com shortly. So the team. What can we expect to see on Saturday from Michigan? Well, my friends, your guess is as good as mine. It's so weird leading up to this first game because we have no open practices we've seen to go off of, no spring game, none of that. I mean, it was only a few weeks ago where these players got to actually hit each other in pads. So what do we have to go off of? Well, we got some Twitter hype videos. We've got, you know, players and coaches and coordinators, you know, especially the coaches and coordinators blessing and praising all their guys for being awesome and they're all ready to play on Saturday. But, you know, let's see what we can dissect here and what we know. So you look at the offense. Michigan has a lot to replace. There's no doubt about it. They have 5 starters from the 2019 offense returning. Wide receiver Ronnie Bell, running back Zach Charbonnet and Hassan Haskins, tight end Nick Eubanks, and tackle Jalen Mayfield. Now, at quarterback, we knew that Michigan had 2 options to replace Shea Patterson, junior Dylan McCaffrey and sophomore Joe Milton. And McCaffrey, he's opting out for the season, which basically means he will presumably enter the transfer protocol. So I think we all know at this point who the starter will be. I don't think Cade McNamara usurped Joe Milton here. And obviously, everyone's been talking about Joe Milton being the guy. And I think the key thing here is, did Milton just completely separate himself from the pack and prove to the coaching staff that he is the guy and the competition between him and McCaffrey just wasn't close? Or did Milton just barely beat him out and McCaffrey just kind of said, screw it, I'm out? And I guess we'll find out on Saturday, but I think the former. I find it hard to imagine that Dylan McCaffrey was going to transfer if the competition was that close. So you tend to think that, wow, Milton must have really separated himself from the competition. At least that's what we're hearing from the coaching staff, and that's what they've been talking about in terms of how special of a player Milton can be. I think the bigger questions for Michigan are on the offensive line and at wide receiver. Now, of those, I do have more confidence in the offensive line. Only one returning starter in Jalen Mayfield, and you know, you can't get on the other guys that left the team. Obviously, three of them seniors, and they were out of eligibility. And the fourth was Cesar Ruiz, the center, who got drafted very high in the NFL draft. Actually, all four of those guys got drafted in the draft. Cesar Ruiz in the first round in New Orleans. But that's kind of a reason why I'm optimistic about this group. Because if there's one thing we know, offensive line coach Ed Warner has done a great job year in and year out getting his offensive lines to gel and to perform. And sure, the critics out there are going to say, you know, Michigan's returning the least amount of starters than any other Big Ten team in the country. But the key word there is starters. It's not like Michigan's just throwing out guys out there that have never played before. Other linemen like Ryan Hayes and Andrew Stuber, they don't have a ton of starts, but they've played in a ton of games. Hayes saw action in 9 games last year. Stuber missed last year due to injury, but played in 10 games in the 2018 season. Even Andrew Vistardis, who will likely replace Cesar Ruiz at center, hard shoes to fill, but this guy's played in 13 games in his career. So I think there are reasons to be optimistic here about this O-line, especially with a big-time offensive line coach in Ed Warner. The wide receivers, though, there's no easy way to slice it. There are definitely some question marks there. DPJ gets drafted, Tariq Black transfers to Texas, and the biggest loss, Nico Collins, who decided to come back for his senior year, decides to opt out when the Big Ten initially postpones the season of the spring, and as of right now, still remains on the opt-out list. And sure, Michigan gets a huge lift by returning Ronnie Bell, who led the team last year with 48 receptions and 758 yards, but I can't overstate how big of a loss not having Nico Collins is. I mean, if you listen to this podcast, chances are you're probably a Michigan football fan, and I don't need to tell you from watching Michigan football how big of a loss not having Nico Collins on this team is. And sure, I think there's a lot of talent with the sophomores. Cornelius Johnson, really excited to see him play. Mike Sanristol, Giles Jackson. But Cornelius Johnson is the only receiver on this roster over 6 feet tall. He's 6'3". Even Ronnie Bell, who's listed at 6 foot, probably more of a 5'10", 5'11 guy. It's kind of that age old, like the tail of the tape, you know, what's listed in the media guide. He's listed as 6 foot in the media guide, but he's probably more of a 5'10", 5'11 guy. So I think the question mark here for Michigan at the wide receiver position, especially when you lose a big vertical threat like Nico Collins, is who's going up vertically and grabbing that deep ball? Who's grabbing that fade in the end zone? So if you're a fan of speed and space, which is the whole staple of the Josh Gattis system, which we didn't really get a whole heck of a lot of last year, so maybe year number two out of Josh Gattis, you just got to hope you see more of it this year, because Michigan's advantage, at least at the receiving core, seems to be more leaning towards speedier guys than those athletic vertical freaks that we've seen, guys like a Nico Collins just go up and just grab balls, 50-50 balls out of the air. Now on the bright side, I think you can feel good about the tight end group. Nick Eubanks is back. Ben Mason is back. He's been converted to tight end. Schoonmaker and Eric all available as well. That's a crew that scored 5 touchdowns last year and combined for 322 yards. And then, you know, arguably the best group, or at least the one with the most depth and options to choose from, is the running back position. I mean, Michigan gets its 2 top rushers back from last year in Zach Charbonnet and Hassan Haskins. Christian Turner, kind of the long forgotten guy in that group, is still there. And oh, by the way, Chris Evans is back after missing the 2019 season. That's huge for that group. I mean, that's 4 guys right there you can hand the rock to and feel pretty good about. And oh, by the way, they got this freshman in Blake Corum that, if you watch the hype videos, he looks legit. So it's going to be really interesting to see who Michigan feeds the rock to on Saturday. I'd imagine we'll see probably a steady rotation of Haskins, Charbonnet, and Evans. But on a young team, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Evans is the first one called on to maybe provide some veteran leadership out of the backfield, especially with a new quarterback starting the sophomore this year in Milton. On the defensive side of the ball, I think there's definitely some optimism there, maybe a little bit more than on the offense. Kind of the same situation in terms of the starters, but a lot of guys that come back that weren't necessarily starters last year, but saw a lot of game action. Michigan brings back 5 starters. That includes the 3 on the defensive line Aiden Hutchinson, Carlo Kemp, Kwity Paye. You got to love that group right there. You get linebacker Cam McGrone, defensive back Brad Hawkins. They're the other returning starters. But just like I mentioned with the offense, several other guys on this defense played significant time last year. Daxton Hill, Michael Barrett, Vincent Gray, and oh, by the way, Josh Ross, who started and played great at linebacker before he got hurt last year, and then Cam McGrone came in and carried the way at the linebacker position the rest of the year. So there's a lot of talent on this Don Brown defense, and of those key position groups, there's no doubt the strength of this defense will be up front. The D-line trio of Kemp, Paye, and Hutchinson, they all registered 40-plus tackles last season, and I'd expect some big things, too, from Christopher Hinton. You know, he was a true freshman last year. To be on that defensive line with those other three guys, you know, you might see Kwity Paye get some double teams. Same thing with Hutchinson and Kemp. So opportunity for Hinton to really do something good there on that D-line. And I think you got to feel good about the linebackers, too. Josh Ross is back, led that group with 83 career tackles, back from injury. The guy who stepped in from him played lights out. Cam McGrone, 66 tackles the back half of last season. Going to be really exciting to see both of those guys out there at the same time for this defense. I think the key here is going to be who plays Viper and how effective are they. That's a mainstay in the Don Brown defense, and it looks like Michael Barrett, that's where the hype's been on him. Looks like he'll be the guy to replace Kalik Hudson in that role. But then there's the secondary, which you probably would feel better about them playing maybe week one against a Rutgers than kind of a ridiculous quarterback and wide receiver duo in Tanner Morgan and Rashad Bateman. At least at the cornerback position, there's definitely some concern. And that, of course, is because Ambry Thomas is an opt-out. Michigan will start Vincent Gray, but remains to be seen who plays opposite him. Probably Green. But on the bright side, the safeties are solid in Brad Hawkins and Daxton Hill. The question marks here again, where does Michigan go if Green or one of the other youngsters at the cornerback position doesn't really fill that void left by Ambry Thomas? And even worse, where's the depth? You know, how do you replace a player in the secondary that gets hurt or, God forbid, gets COVID? So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with that Michigan secondary. And I think you could probably expect Don Brown, who I think you can expect this all the time from a Don Brown defense, but he's going to put in a lot of pressure with that 4-3 defense, particularly with some blitzes from the linebackers and expecting his big guys up front like Kemp and Hutchinson and Kwity Paye to get in there and go up against those offensive lines and put a little less pressure on the cornerback situation for Michigan. And then lastly, on special teams, we good, y'all. Norden and Moody are back. Michigan has options at the field goal kicking position. Will Hart, one of the best punters in the Big Ten, is back. And one thing we know about Harbaugh coach teams, they don't give up a heck of a lot of yardage or big plays in kick and punt coverage. So I think you can feel pretty good about this unit. And we'll discuss that with Ryan Burns when we preview things from a Minnesota perspective here in just a minute, because this is one area that I think Michigan has a huge advantage over Minnesota on Saturday and over most teams in the conference, and that is special teams play.
Here we go. Red 29.
All right, it's my pleasure to bring on Ryan Burns, covers Minnesota football for Gopher Illustrated, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. You can check out his great work at gopherillustrated.com. Also hosts a great podcast, too. You can find him on Twitter at RyanBurnsMN. Ryan, great to have you on the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a crazy 2020. You know, it's been long expected. We would hope that we'd be able to play football, and we'll finally do that on Saturday. It's been a long wait for athletes and coaches, athletic departments, and the fans. You know, we know what it's been like for Michigan. You know, you cover the Gophers. What's it been like the last few months in Minneapolis for this football team as they prep to finally get the season underway?
It's been strange, just like it has been everywhere else in 2020. Just the way Minnesota had to, you know, in August, they were leading up to fall camp. They thought they were going to be playing. They start practice, and then we get word from the Big Ten that it's canceled, and so they actually sent their players home for about a week, right before Labor Day, and they were starting to try and figure out, okay, what, you know, how do we continue to do this in September and October if we don't have a season? Well, once the players got back on campus, then more and more steam was heading towards the Big Ten's going to play, and then obviously here we are. with a game coming up here on Saturday. So it's been tumultuous. It's been stressful, but welcome to the year 2020.
No doubt about it. And, you know, Ryan, this was a really good football team last year. I think they were projected to finish near the bottom of the Big Ten West. Instead, they put together one of their best seasons in, gosh, 4 or 5 decades. A huge win at home against Penn State, big Outback Bowl victory over Auburn, 11 wins, end of the year 10th in the national polls. Is it fair to say the expectations are pretty sky high for this team this year?
I don't know that they're incredibly high. Now, obviously, when you win 11 games for the first time in 100 years in a football program, excitement is certainly at an all-time level. But we're talking about a team that is still losing a lot defensively. The schedule is certainly favorable compared to some other teams in the Big Ten West, a.k.a. Nebraska. But this is a team that should be competing for the Big Ten West. Now, I think it's going to come down to, on the west side of the division here, I think it really will come down to three teams, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. Minnesota wants to continue to keep themselves in that conversation instead of it just being Wisconsin every single damn year. But to do that, they're going to have to go through Wisconsin. And Wisconsin certainly has some changes for their team. Their QB1 is out indefinitely with a foot injury. There isn't a Jonathan Taylor ready-made replacement running back. And they're also losing their wide receiver one, their best kick returner, and three offensive line starters. So there's a lot that has to happen for Minnesota to win the West this fall. But certainly there's optimism because you have arguably the second best quarterback in the Big Ten back in Tanner Morgan, 30 passing touchdowns to 7 interceptions last year. You have the Big Ten wide receiver of the year back in Rashad Bateman, who caught 60 balls last year for over 20 yards per reception, which is just absurd, especially from Minnesota standards. So if Minnesota is going to reach their aspirations, which is obviously to win the West, it's going to be because this offense continues to hum at a level like we haven't seen here in some time.
So let's talk about that Minnesota offense. You know, you mentioned the talent coming back. We haven't even hit on, you know, experienced running back and Mo Ibrahim and all that, but new offensive coordinator, you know, Mike Sanford Jr., the former Utah State OC, comes in to replace Kirk Scirocco, who leaves to go to Penn State. You know, what does Sanford Jr. bring to this team, and how different do you think the offense will look with him, an offense that was pretty explosive last year?
It was. I mean, Minnesota's putting up 30 points a game in Big Ten play, and I can assure you, and I can assure all your listeners, Minnesota has been incredibly, incredibly mediocre for all 28 years of my time on this earth outside of last year. So to cover an offense that was putting up points like the way Minnesota was in Big Ten play was a gigantic shock to the system. But what Sanford's going to bring is largely a lot of continuity. And what I mean by that is, yes, Minnesota's got an offensive coordinator that's going to be brand new, but I would expect Minnesota's offense to largely remain 80% the same. When you watch the game on Saturday, you're going to see Minnesota run two plays for the running game. It's going to be inside zone and it's going to be outside zone. Minnesota's not switching up their blocking scheme to a gap scheme. They're going to be doing a lot of zone blocking up front. They have a very, very dynamic running back who excels in that zone blocking scheme by the name of Mohamed Ibrahim. But what I think Stanford's going to change, and it's not really even more so change but tweak, is involving more people in the passing game, because last year it was Tyler Johnson and it was Rashad Bateman. They were the ones that gobbled up a gigantic amount of Minnesota's target share. They were the two guys that Minnesota threw to. I'm not even sure that your listeners will entirely comprehend. The tight end position has been neglected at Minnesota in the passing game. They have caught 16 balls the last 2 years.
Wow.
Minnesota's played in 26 games the last 2 years. And the tight end position is averaging under a catch a game. Now, they have, I think I'd argue that the deepest position on Minnesota's team is the tight end position. So they're going to involve the tight ends more in the passing game. They want to use the running backs more in the passing game. But the rest of Minnesota's offensive staff is back from last year outside of the offensive coordinator, as you mentioned. So especially with the abbreviated fall camp, the lack of spring practice, you're not going to see a ton of new changes, but I think you will see a few new wrinkles.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that the tight end position has been like that when you think of
some of these incredible tight ends that have played at Minnesota. You think of, you know, Max Williams recently, probably be the first one that would come to mind. But that's crazy when you throw that number out and you think of the fact that the tight end hasn't, you know, seen as much. So, I mean, do you think that that's one of the kind of the main kind of breakout areas for this team under Sanford this year? I know eyes are going to go on Tanner Morgan throwing the ball to Bateman, but it seems that the tight end position could be kind of a nice little trick up their pocket or trick up their sleeve to catch some defenses.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to involve the tight ends a lot more, and by a lot more, I mean, what are expectations like for that position group? And I mentioned it, they've only caught 16 balls the last 2 years. So if you talk about, say the tight ends now catch 35 passes this fall, well, you think about it, Minnesota's only really guaranteed 9 games, and that's if they get in 9 games with all the different things with COVID, and maybe 10 if they get the bowl game. I mean, if they can catch 35 balls, it's only 3 catches a game. I mean, right, that's not really a lot when you think about an offense that's normally going to pass between 25 and 30 times a game. So I do think it's going to be a wrinkle that Don Brown's Michigan defense has to prepare for. Is the big one I'd be trying to stress to your listeners would be a kid by the name of Brevin Spanford. He is, I believe, number 88 this fall. He is 6'7", 270 pounds, and he's someone that I think physically is the best athletically gifted tight end that Minnesota's had since Max Williams, who was a second-round draft pick a few years back at the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, he is a converted basketball player that has taken a couple of years to really acclimate himself to the game of football, but now in his third year, I know he's making some plays behind the scenes. So I think the tight end position is one that was neglected the past couple of years, and you kind of get it with the way that Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman were producing. I mean, Minnesota had 2 first-team All-Big Ten wide receivers last year. It's never happened that both spots on the wide receiver team in terms of first team were from the same school. And for a school like Minnesota to do that, you'd be hoping that they were feeding them. But Tyler's not walking back through that door, and there's not really another 1B to Rashad Bateman's 1A right now. So you're going to have to diversify your passing game portfolio.
Yeah, Tyler Johnson making some nice money playing on Sundays, and we know Bateman will be doing that pretty soon. Probably expect quarterback Tanner Morgan to be playing on Sundays soon as well. Talking to Ryan Burns, covers Minnesota football for Gopher Illustrated. You can check out his great work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, you know, we talked about the offense, and they've been so explosive, and we expect to see a lot of that again this year. On the defensive side of the ball, 7 starters are gone. 4 of those guys drafted to the NFL, and all 4 were the top tacklers on the team last season. What's the feeling on the defense this year? You know, what unit is strong? What unit is there maybe some concerns about? You know, how's that shaping up for this team?
Yeah, there's a lot of ambiguity defensively, and that's where I think there are going to be some points put up on Saturday night, because, you know, I don't know how it all worked out at Michigan in terms of spring practice versus fall practice and everything like that, but I don't think many fans realize the lack of tackling that has been here the last 10 and a half months. I mean, you think about it, I think Michigan and Minnesota's last game played were January 1st or December 31st, whatever it was. Well, I can ensure from the Minnesota side of things here, they got 3 spring practices. 2 of them were certainly not padded, and I think the 3rd one was just in shells. They didn't do any tackling that day. And then the rest of spring ball gets canceled, so you don't get to do any new tackling. You don't get to do anything like that. And then we get here into fall camp, and I don't believe any of the Big Ten teams had really progressed to a point in the first fall camp where they were able to tackle, and then the season gets canceled. It gets put back on. So you're talking about 2 Big Ten teams on Saturday that maybe have 7, 8, 9, 10 padded practices in the last 10 and a half months. I mean, there's going to be some big plays, I think, on Saturday because of the lack of what each Big Ten team was able to do. And for Minnesota defensively, I think the spot to watch in terms of there's a lot of inexperience is going to be at linebacker. Minnesota plays a base 4-2-5 defense, so a base nickel defense more times than not. And both of their starting linebackers from last year are gone. Both were 3-year starters under P.J. Fleck and Thomas Barber and Kamal Martin, who's now with the Green Bay Packers. And behind them, there's only there's one guy who has any sort of experience by the name of Mariano Sorry-Marin. He started a few different games for Minnesota last year, but at that other linebacker spot, there is nothing there in terms of experience. Now, there is some young, athletic, talented guys there that are freshmen, certainly, and that's what defensive coordinator Joe Rossi talked about today with the media, but it's very inexperienced, and inexperienced linebackers give me a little bit of reason for concern. I'd say a strength of this Gopher defense would be their corners. One named Coney Durr, all Big Ten, honorable mention last year with 10 best, is defended. And then for the other corner, it's going to be a revenge game because he's a former Michigan Wolverine by the name of Benjamin St. Juice.
Yep, that's right.
And I remember the story coming in was Harbaugh tried to get him to medically retire. He was having some soft tissue injuries, and essentially St. Juice said, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Put his name into the transfer portal, transferred here to Minnesota, and he was really good for Minnesota down the stretch last year. A kid that's 6'2", really long, not afraid to be physical. He also had 10 passes defended, so I know this is probably one that St. Juice has had circled on the calendar for some time.
Yeah, Michigan's got a cornerback in Ambry Thomas who's sitting out the year and probably could use some depth with him. And, of course, he's now on Minnesota. So it's going to be really interesting to see, especially how a young Michigan offense attacks that defense for Minnesota on Saturday. And, you know, close games, which this one could be a close one on Saturday, at least that's what Vegas thinks, that sometimes can come down to the kicking game. And Minnesota was a bit pedestrian kicking the ball last year, 11 for 15 kicking the ball, not many field goal attempts, but I guess that says a lot about the fact they were putting it in the end zone a lot. But what's the confidence level for this special teams unit and notably field goal kicking if the game, you know, comes down to a big kick at the end?
Oh, man. Gopher special teams is a very touchy subject for me because I think you put it very kindly saying that special teams and kicking play was pedestrian. And it's funny you mention all this because in my game preview that'll be going up on Friday on Gopher Illustrated, I looked exactly at the special teams and how good Michigan's are, and I'm incredibly envious of Quinn Norton. I'm incredibly jealous of your punter, who is very, very good. Because Minnesota last year, it was bad. It's a miracle that Minnesota won 11 games with how bad their special teams were. I mean, it was bad. You look at the kicking game last year. Quinn Norton makes that 57-yarder in the Citrus Bowl. Minnesota only made one field goal over 39 yards last year.
Wow.
That is horrible. And yes, they're both back. Both of Minnesota's kickers are back, but they need to improve upon that. Will Hart leads the Big Ten last fall in per punt average and 45.5 yards per punt. I'm very envious. Plus, he had 15 punts over 50 yards. Minnesota's punter is going to be brand new this fall, but Minnesota's punting game last fall was dead last in yards per punt at 37. And Jacob Herbers had two punts over 50 yards. Now, they have a brand new Australian punter by the name of Mark Crawford. All I know is he is 26 years old, and we haven't seen him punt once because there's no media allowed. And then you also look at the return game, a facet that Minnesota struggled immensely in last year. I mean, Minnesota was bad. They were dead last in punt return yards. They had 9 punt return yards in Big Ten play. And they were also dead last in yards per punt. Punt return in 1.3 yards, where you look at Michigan on the flip side. I mean, you guys led the Big Ten in punt return yards, and you were second in yards per punt return. I mean, this is clearly an area that Michigan is going to have an advantage in my eyes. The question is this finally the game that Minnesota has a close game and special teams finally bite them in the bum, that if only they had adequate special teams, they would be competing in more games like this. We're going to have to see. I mean, maybe Minnesota special teams come out with some kind of heroic performance on Saturday, but I'm certainly not expecting that.
Yeah, well, I think we all think it's going to be a really good football game. I'd be shocked if it's a blowout one way or the other, but let's prognosticate a little bit. You know, obviously you cover this team starting a little bit with what's going on in Michigan. It's so hard to predict, right? Because it's a weird year. no fans in the stadium, so you kind of lose that whole home field advantage. Very minimal practices with the COVID situation, but from what you've seen from the team and what you expect could happen on Saturday, I mean, how do you see the game playing out? Maybe a prediction. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very close game. I mean, College game day is here in town. Obviously, I'm not sure fans know this, but College game day is not allowing any fans on set this year. So, yes, they're here, but none of the Minnesota fans can go see them because they're going to be set up inside TCF Bank Stadium. It's just kind of a weird deal. But to me, this game comes down to a couple key areas. Number one, it's going to be, I think, the matchup that's going to dictate the night is going to be Minnesota's offensive line versus how stout Michigan's defensive line is.
I agree.
I mean, Minnesota's got a lot of returning starters on their offensive line. They've returned six guys who started games for them last year. But you look at Michigan, I mean, Aiden Hutchinson, Quiddy Pay, Carlo Kemp, these are all very, very talented guys, especially Hutchinson and Pay. And if Tanner Morgan can't find time in the pocket and Minnesota can't get their running game going, I mean, you're going to be asking a lot of a very inexperienced defense trying to combat a lot of talent on Michigan's offensive side of the ball. So if Minnesota's offensive line can hold their own, you know, I feel good about Minnesota being able to attack downfield with that brand new linebacking core outside of Cam McGrone, those brand new corners that Michigan are going to have to play, because Minnesota still does have Rashad Bateman, and he can certainly take the top off the defense. And the other side of things, it would be, how does Michigan move the ball? Now, Joe Milton is very, very talented. I mean, I don't have to tell you. You know, 6'5", 240, has a very strong arm. But how does Michigan move the ball without Donovan Peoples-Jones, without Nico Collins, without four all-conference starters from their offensive line last year? I mean, I think the stat is Michigan's losing 132 career starts on their offensive line, and 17 career starts are back, and 13 of those are from Jalen Mayfield, who was a one-time Gopher football commit. So if Minnesota can get pressure on an inexperienced offensive line, an inexperienced wide receiver core for the most part, and an inexperienced quarterback, I mean, Joe Milton's only thrown the ball 11 times in his life in the collegiate level, and he's got two picks. So if you can figure out a way to put Michigan into neutral to negative game script situations where, say, Minnesota's up 13-7 at halftime, I mean, I think that bodes well for Minnesota's chances being able to hold on to this game at the end. But I do think it's going to be a very close game. I was very surprised to see this game swing 6 points.
Me too.
In Michigan's favor. And usually, you know, I can tell you, everybody's panicking. Who's out? Who's out? Who's out? I mean, there are going to be a couple of players out for Minnesota with COVID, but it's no one that should generate a six-point swing. At least that's what I'll say. So I think Minnesota and Michigan, I think this is going to be a very, very good game. I could see it going either way.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, what does Vegas know that we don't know? Because I was just as shocked about that swing. And look, I mean, that's going to be the situation all year, Ryan, with the COVID situation. We just don't even know. It's great to sit here and prognosticate how many wins our respective teams are going to have and all that. But at the same time, you just don't know. I mean, a game, you know, I know another tough game on the calendar. We talked about Wisconsin for Minnesota, but also Iowa. You know, right now on paper, you could say, yeah, maybe Wisconsin or Iowa would have an advantage over Minnesota, but you just don't know because they could have some key players not be able to play, or those games might not even be played later in the year because too many players are out and they got to shut things down.
Yeah, to me, it's not a matter of if, you know, if COVID hits the Big Ten, it's a matter of when.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen the SEC just here in the past week get hit really hard. And that's the thing about trying to prognosticate, especially this season, is on a normal year, yeah, you're just going to worry about the occasional big injury or two. Well, each Saturday, I mean, we have no idea who's going to play because each one of these Big Ten coaches, PJ Fleck, Kirk Ferentz, Jim Harbaugh, they're not going to tell you. They don't want the opponent to have that advantage. So it's going to be on any given Saturday, we're going to get 60, 75 minutes before the game. Those of us lucky enough to be in a press box are going to look down on the field, go through the roster and say, huh, looks like Minnesota's missing four starters today, or Michigan's without five starters today, and that's just going to have to be what it is. And then you kind of reflect back on it and go to the beginning of the year, Because, yeah, if I would have known starter X, Y, and Z was going to be out, I wouldn't have picked the way I did. And so, yeah, it's going to be impossible for us here on the media, but it's very first world problems. You know, I'm just glad I get to watch a game this Saturday, and I hope it's a fantastic, fantastic game for the nation to watch on ABC.
No, I agree. What a great opportunity for two schools and one of the most historic, oldest trophies with the Little Brown Jug. I mean, these two teams being able to take the spotlight on Saturday night is going to be a lot of fun. Ryan, we were talking about media. I just had one more before we let you go. I know there were some heavy hearts in Minneapolis this week. Legendary sports journalist for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Sid Hartman, passed away at the ripe age of 100. I know you don't cover sports in Minneapolis without knowing and appreciating what Sid did. He's just a true legend in sports reporting and journalism in general. Loved his Gophers football. What did he mean to the community there and to the Gophers team?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about Sid. Sid is just a gigantic icon here in the Twin Cities area, and certainly within the sports media here. But he is, I mean, even the people who don't know sports know Sid Hartman. I mean, Sid Hartman, for me, I mean, at every Gopher football game that I've been in the press box, he sits directly behind me. And you've gotten to know him over the years, and he was just a guy that you just thought every year, how in the world does this guy keep doing it? I mean, he's in the press box at 100 years old, and he's sitting there, he's got his pen and paper. He's asking questions at Flex press conferences. He's got his own special seat there. I mean, he's done so much for this market, and that's where when the news broke here this past week, you know, you were really sad because, like I said, you thought the guy was going to live forever, and he left a lasting impact upon many, many people here within the sports community and just within the entire state of Minnesota because he did this for so long. I mean, 70-something years. I think, I believe, like, he was the GM of the Minneapolis Lakers at one point.
That's so cool.
Like, way, way back there, and to just continue to do what he did for so, so long. You know, I remember sitting next to him in the press box one day, and we were talking, and, you know, he told me, you know, I don't think I've ever worked a day in my life because I love sports this much, and it doesn't feel like work to me. So, you know, he lived a fantastic, fantastic life, and he's going to be sorely missed.
Yeah, true legend. Ryan Burns, appreciate the time. Of course, again, Ryan covers Minnesota football for Gopher Illustrated. That's part of the 24/7 Sports Network. You can check out his great work, gopherillustrated.com. Hosts a great podcast there as well. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Burns MN. Ryan, thanks again for the time today, and enjoy the game on Saturday night.
Appreciate it.
The pick segment is back for another season. This is where I give you four games with my pick against the spread, including my lock of the week. So let's get to it. We're going to go to Manhattan. Kansas State hosts Kansas. Kansas State is an 18-point favorite. There is no reason for me to bury the lead here. Kansas is freaking terrible. In their last two games, they've averaged less than 200 yards of offense. They've given up more than 550 yards defensively. Kansas State, on the other hand, they've won this rivalry game 11 years in a row. They're going to make it 12. I expect them to cover and win by the 18 points here. Kansas State, 9-3 against their spread in their last 12 games as well. Kansas State covers the spread. They win by 18 or more points. I'm taking the Wildcats. Let's keep it in the Big 12 and head to Fort Worth. That's where Oklahoma visits TCU. Oklahoma is a 6.5-point favorite in this one. They got a much-needed bye week after that overtime thriller against Texas. Crazy to think, Oklahoma's 2-2 after they started the regular season ranked 5th in the country. And sure, crazier things have happened. But I just don't see an Oklahoma team losing and moving to 2-3. Their quarterback, Spencer Rattler, is coming in with confidence after that big overtime win against Texas. And TCU, they rank near the bottom of the conference in opponent red zone touchdown conversion percentage. How about digging up that stat? I love that this is a 6.5-pointer. I expect Oklahoma to win by at least a touchdown. I'm taking the Sooners. Next, we'll head to the 305. That's where Miami hosts Virginia. The Canes are 11-point favorites. This Virginia defense is bad. They've allowed 38 or more points in each of their last three games. Here's a nice little betting nugget for you, too. Miami is 4-0 against the spread as a favorite this season. Gotta stick with that trend. I'm taking Miami and the 11 points.
And my lock of the week, Alabama. They're 20.5-point favorites on the road at Tennessee. Bama looked the part last week against Georgia. They pulled away late in that game. Their offense has been red hot. Defense a little leaky, but how can you expect Tennessee to do anything formidable in this game on Saturday? They got their butts handed to them by Kentucky. They benched their starting quarterback. They fired their assistant coach after the game. Yikes. I expect the Tide to roll here and win big. I actually have this one rated as a 4-touchdown victory for Alabama. So getting 20.5 points here is a lot of value. Roll Tide. That's my lock of the week. And now for the game that matters most on Saturday, the 17th-ranked Michigan Wolverines head to Minneapolis to face the 21st-ranked Minnesota Golden Gophers. Kickoff will be around 7:44 Eastern. These two teams get the national spotlight. College game day on hand for this one earlier in the day. ABC's big primetime game with Chris Fowler, Kirk Herbstreit, and Maria Taylor. Of course, on the radio side, Jim Brandstetter, Dan Dierdorf, Doug Karsh. They'll be on the call on the Learfield IMG Michigan Football Radio Network. And this is going to be the 104th meeting between these two schools. Michigan has only faced Michigan State and Ohio State more than Minnesota. This will be the 104th meeting between these two schools and the 97th meeting for the Little Brown Jug. Michigan has a 71-23-2 record for the trophy. Michigan has won the last two games in the series. That last meeting back in 2017 when they went to Minneapolis and won at TCF Bank Stadium by a score of 33-10. Michigan's won 24 of the last 26 games played between the two schools. They're 2-0 in games played at the new TCF Bank Stadium. Michigan has won 12 of their last 14 Big Ten openers and 35 of their last 38. All good stats, all good numbers. Michigan currently a 3-point favorite in this game. Bit of a point spread move here in this one. Minnesota opened as a 2.5-point favorite. PJ Fleck has said that some players on this Minnesota football team will miss the game due to the virus, but hasn't named who. That's not the only unknown in this game. In fact, a lot of unknowns here. On the Michigan side of the ball, young football team, experienced players that have gotten snaps, but a lot of new starters across the board, and we'll get to see if the Joe Milton hype is legit. And on the flip side for Minnesota, huge expectations for them. An 11-win season last year, they returned two amazing players, the second-best quarterback in the Big Ten in Tanner Morgan, and undoubtedly the best wide receiver in the conference in Rashad Bateman, but a new offensive coordinator and a couple questions on that defense. And the interesting thing here is that this is a game that pre-COVID really freaked you out as a Michigan fan on the calendar. I know a lot of people, me included, kind of circled this date on the original calendar and said, ooh, that's the road game to worry about in the conference. If you watched the Minnesota and Penn State game last year and just saw how ruckus that crowd was at TCF Bank Stadium for that game, you kind of started thinking, ugh, this isn't going to be fun for Michigan next year. But that home field advantage, that's basically gone with no fans in attendance as the conference will play with no fans. And this now becomes the first game of the year where anything can happen. And I think the key battle in this game is going to be the battle in the trenches. Most notably, the Minnesota offensive line versus Michigan's defensive line. We know that the D-line is a huge strength for Michigan, and we know Don Brown likes to bring the blitz and bring the pressure. And if Michigan wins that battle, and they put constant pressure on Tanner Morgan and limit his ability to get Bateman involved and make big plays, that is really good for the Michigan football team. And on the other side of the ball, Minnesota has some question marks on defense, so this won't be the worst defense to get a new offensive line to gel against and break in a new quarterback in Joe Milton. We'll be interested to see how Michigan relies on the running game versus getting the receivers involved and if they're more run-heavy versus pass-heavy, at least at the start of the game. So if this game is close also, pretty important to note, if it comes down to special teams, Michigan has a decided advantage there. It's an incredibly difficult game to predict in a terribly weird college football season. There are a ton of ways to go in this one, but I just think Michigan finds a way to get it done in a close one. I think that defensive front for Michigan is what makes the difference here. They're going to do just enough to make Morgan uncomfortable and limit some big plays to Bateman.
I'm going to go with Michigan 23, Minnesota 21. Minnesota's field goal kicking, a weak spot for them all of last year, haunts them in this one. I think they're going to miss a big kick in this game. And I'm going to take Michigan 23, Minnesota 21. That will do it for this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Big thanks to Ryan Burns from GopherIllustrated.com for helping break things down from a Minnesota perspective for this week's game. And a big thank you for you for tuning in. As always, you can find me on Twitter at KRich23. Email the show at hailtothepod@gmail.com. And be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast anywhere your favorite podcasts are found, including Apple iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Enjoy the game in prime time on Saturday night. It's been a long time coming for Michigan football. Stay safe, stay well, and as always, go Blue.